The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to another edition of Feminist Movie Friday. And I think it is actually going to be released on Friday this time because I'm actually doing work this time, Annie. Aren't you proud?
I am. I'm very happy about this.
But yes, so if you're listening as it's released, it'll be a Friday. If you waited to listen to on a Friday, happy Friday. If not, it's just a feminist movie day. You're welcome.
Any day.
Any day is a feminist movie day, as it should be. But we're back, and this time we're back with an oldie, but a goodie, and it is something that we were talking about previously, because it was one of those, Annie, you've never watched this, what? Conversations. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Fried Green Tomatoes, or also called Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe. So other places are, they do the full title.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go ahead and add some warnings to this. One, this was released in 1991 and is based in Alabama/Georgia in the 1930s. So it has a lot of offensive, outdated content. Outdated as in, like, it's not acceptable today, but was portrayed as it would have been in the 1930s. So there's that. It depicts racism, white supremacy, murder, death, cannibalism, and abuse. So there's a lot. This is definitely one of those movies that, like, kind of borders on being Southern Gothic. It's definitely Southern Tales, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reminiscent to me of someone like Carson McCullers would have written. Actually, I read a fact that the Harper Lee, who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, loved this book and really felt it was a great book. So I was like, oh, if I was the author, Fannie Flagg, I would have taken that quote and framed it. If Harper Lee said that I wrote an amazing book.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So about the movie, this was based on the 1987 book by Fannie Flagg titled Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe. And she and Carol Sabisky wrote the screenplay for this movie. The movie was directed by John Avnet, who read the book in 1987, took it to producers, was like, oh, this needs to be a movie. And it was nominated for a couple of Academy Awards. It did not win, but it did win a GLAAD Award, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about this. People already know. I know y'all already know. For those of you who have seen Fried Green Tomatoes, who like or love this movie or book, you already know why. But there's a lot of debate, and we're going to jump into it. But first, let's talk about the movie. So the characters include Kathy Bates as Evelyn Couch, Jessica Tandy, R.I.P., she was a real one for real, as Nene Threadgood, Mary Louise Parker as Ruth Jameson, Mary Stuart Masterson as Iggy Threadgood, or Imogene Threadgood, Cicely Tyson as Sipsy, Stan Shaw as Big George, and my childhood love, Chris O'Donnell as the short-lived character of Buddy Threadgood. Yes, I mentioned him because I love him. I loved him from Circle of Friends. Have you ever seen this movie, Annie?
Oh, no. But I'm so curious. I had a brief crush on him, too. This is interesting.
Love, love, love. So Circle of Friends, and No, We're Not Talking About It, is based on a book by Irish author Maeve Binchy, who I loved the book. And I loved this movie. Minnie Driver became my favorite. I think she was my woman crush as a kid, too, because she was so fantastic in this movie. They were so fantastic. That might be another movie we have to visit, Annie, because I loved it so much. Oh, anyway, yes. It's based in Ireland in 1950s, I think. But that's where I first saw Chris O'Donnell. I was like, yes, please.
That's much less embarrassing than mine, which is Batman and Robin Forever.
No! I try to ignore those days. I try not to mention it. It's Robin days. Time.
And I had a crush on him. It's very, very embarrassing, but I'll share it. It's okay. Oh.
I mean, that's an iconic movie because you had all the characters, all the actors and all the characters. Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl, the one and only time that was featured.
The puns.
Oh,
this was
so
before
bad.
I even knew I loved puns so much. I think it was like touching. It was resonating with something in my brain.
This was the George Clooney version, right? I just remember Robin. I'm not going to lie. I can't even remember who the Batman was because in my head it was. But like, yeah, it's definitely one of those infamous, like, okay.
Oh, the puns.
I love we're talking about
shameless.
He's so good and bad at the same time. Uh-huh. But yeah, so there you go. We're now just talking about Chris O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. I loved him with all my heart.
I didn't
know
this was him. So this is great.
Did you not realize that was him?
No.
When you watched it?
Yeah, so I just watched it this morning.
Okay.
And a lot of the actors are just so much younger than things I've seen them in.
Yes, true.
That I was like, I know I've seen you before, but I don't know where.
Yeah. So my partner watched it with me. And when Mary Louise Parker came on, he's like, is that the woman from Weeds? I was like, yeah, this is one of her, not first roles, but like one of the beginnings of her role. Mary Stuart Masterson were like, the teen stars of the 90s. I was like, because he was like, is she in a lot of things? Mary Stuart Masterson. I was like, yeah, she was really big in the 90s. You just didn't know because you so much older than.
No.
I'm going to stop talking because it makes me sad. Anyway, I'm reminiscing. It's fine. But yeah, so there's some of the characters. We're not mentioning all of them, but those are the main ones to remember, including remembering that Chris O'Donnell, yes, was indeed in there. And they all have really unfortunate accents, except for Jessica Tandy, as well as Cicely Tyson.
Those
are the only two who actually
pulled it off. Stay away from
trains
is what I've learned.
And the whole part to this, to me, was like every time we were watching that and this love of trains, they're like, why do they love trains so much? It just... Not seem to be.
I'd be like, never again. Like, go near a train.
Inevitably, someone's going to get ran over. But yeah, so let's jump into the plot. We're introduced to Evelyn, who is going with her husband to a nursing home to see his aunt, who obviously does not like either one of them. But they stop in a small town called Whistle Stop, which has actually been run down and abandoned at this point. Apparently, it's based out of Juliet, Georgia. I don't know where that is. 20 minutes outside of Macon. I'm interested. And there she meets Ninny Threadgood, who starts just telling her all these amazing stories. It's really fun to me because you do have those moments where people just start talking and you're like, what's happening? What's happening? And it ends up being amazing. And here we see that happening. And she talks about her life in her hometown, Whistle Stop. Which is like, have you ever been there? She's like, actually, I have. And a beautiful friendship begins as Nini starts her tales of Iggy and Ruth. So let's talk about Iggy and Ruth because we have a flashback and forth throughout this movie. So it begins with, the death of Buddy, who is the love of everyone's life, it sounds like, to be honest.
Yeah.
We see him coming in, and obviously a big wedding is about to happen. They introduce Iggy as a child, and she is obviously a tomboy character with scrapes on her knees. Her younger brother teases her, making her attack him, runs out the door. Dear Buddy has to be the one to calm her down, and you can tell this is her favorite person in the whole wide world as they cling to each other. He is a handsome man, again, teasing and flirting with everyone, but there's only one love, and it's Ruth, who we see together. And we can tell that Edgy loves Ruth, too. So this is the perfect threesome as they're going, as they're enjoying their day. And I'm thinking several things about this. As they're enjoying their day, her hat, Ruth's hat, flies off, and he goes to retrieve it, and he gets stuck in the train. And as he's trying to jump away, oh, he dies once again.
Yep, his shoe gets... Okay. Can I preface this? I want to say something here. I have never seen this movie. I had an idea of what it was, and it was like older women having fun being older women. I don't know why I thought that, but that's what I thought it was. And I'm going into this movie, the first like 15 minutes. This guy gets his shoe stuck at the train track, and it's all building of tension. And I'm like, oh, surely he'll get away. And then it shows him kind of like get out of the shoe and jump away. And I thought, oh, he made it. No.
He did not.
No. I was like, what movie is this?
Well, several article comes out with it being a dark comedy. So like, is considered...
Several times I was like, this is sort of a horror movie right now.
Think of it as, this was released 2 years after Steel Magnolias. Mm. And so it kind of along those same lines, a lot of like heart-wrenching moments, but funny too. So this was the 90s formula that they had. And this is like the wholesome but not wholesome. Like cannibalism. I'm like, what the hell?
I know.
We'll
get back.
And everybody was
that.
Laughing apparently. I was like, well, okay.
My stomach was churning.
I said something at one point to my partner again who was watching with me, and he's like, don't do that to me. And I was like, don't do what he does and we'll be fine. Just kidding. I don't condone it, y'all. I'm going to be on so many lists. But yeah, so Edgy does not take this well. Nobody does, really. But Edgy really becomes more reclusive. They say that the only person who can get close to her is Big George. And eventually she grows up and she is more rebellious, hanging out the wrong places, drinking and gambling. And there's some loose women, all these things, even yelling at the preacher. Oh, my God.
Oh.
And so essentially Ruth comes back to try to help her. The mama comes and calls Ruth to help her out. She's like, I can't do anything about it, but you can. And at this point, a beautiful relationship starts and blossoms. The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Here, I like to emphasize, as a kid, when I was watching this, because I was old enough to watch, I think it was one of those PG movies, because PG-13 hadn't happened yet.
Oh.
I think it's 1991, so you tell me. But like, it came out, and you get the rentals, and I watched it. I did not catch any of the sexual overtones. I'm just like, oh, they really love each other, as in friends and sisters. Like, as I'm watching it this time around, I was like, oh, there's a lot of lingering looks here. Yep. Which we'll talk about a little more. But they purposely did this. We'll talk about that as well. They just really dialed it down a lot, or almost try to make it like if people are offended by it, they can ignore it. So they wanted to make sure it was successful. And it was. But here we see their relationship blossom and they get close. They, you know, Iggy shows off her kind side as she donates food from the train, which she loves, and they're on, and they're okay to jump out of it. I'm like, what? Again, okay, whatever. Y'all really like this train thing. as they do all those things and get closer at one point on this adventure, because Ruth does not give up, she goes to a swarm of, like, a beehive, charms the bees, and gets a jar of honey, which, by the way, Stuart Masterson did that herself. She actually did that because the stunt person quit when she found out she had to do that scene.
Fair.
So Mary Stuart Masterson was like, yeah, I got it. And she did it. And it's a beautiful scene in which earns her the title or the nickname, the Bee Charmer, or the Bee Chama, as they kept saying.
The Southern accents. Yeah.
I get it. It's hard, but wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all this happens. And then Ruth says she's getting married. Kind of sad moment. Ruth leaves and Iggy just does her thing. And there's an implication here because Iggy refuses to go to the wedding as well. But again, not a lot of like lingering heartbreak or anything. Just like, oh, why are you doing that? Okay, gone. We see Ruth going into the house with her new husband and Ruth's mom comes with them as well. Iggy goes to check up on her and finds that Ruth is not in a good situation as she is being abused. But Ruth said, don't worry about it. Go away, go away. So she goes away until she gets a letter from Ruth saying that, come and get her, essentially. It was code for, please come and get me. I will go where you go, essentially, which is a biblical verse. And part of that is because she had found out she was pregnant. Also, her mother had died, so she was alone and did not want to raise this child with him, who was severely violent. So Iggy goes to get her, and Iggy and fam. So Big George comes, and her brother had come to rescue her, but a big violent incident happens. I was like, damn, they went all in on the scene.
I thought she was going to die. I thought Ruth was dead at one point.
Right. And the fact that the men never do anything was kind of interesting, other than threaten them. Because I'm like, why didn't, like, somebody go and at least punch him? But okay. That's fine. But they get away, and Ruth and Iggy are happy starting their own cafe, Whistle Stop Cafe, with the infamous fried green tomatoes. I'm really hungry right now. I really want some fried green tomatoes.
I love fried green tomatoes.
I do too. And a shout out to my favorite restaurant, not a sponsor, Heirloom Barbecue, who is run by a Korean woman and her white husband, and has some of the best barbecue and the best fried green tomatoes, but it's only seasonal, and you have to watch out on Instagram to see when they fry it up, but I want some. So Anyway, okay, back to, of course, we come back in between these stories to see Evelyn's life. Evelyn, who we originated with, has been trying to navigate her unhappy life, trying to get her husband to pay attention to her, her finding her confidence, and figuring out how to navigate it as, like, at one point there's an article that talks about how feminism is coming into play, because we do see her going from both how to be sexually happy classes, like how to satisfy your man, and we see the infamous saran wrap scene. I think that's where it really began, because I know there's been jokes, but I want to say that's where it originated, standing at the door waiting for your husband and only in saran wrap and heels. I think that's where it originated.
Oh my gosh.
From.
I wish I could captured my response to this whole movie. I didn't know any of this was going to happen. I was like, whoa, I've never heard of that. I had a wild morning, listeners.
You were like going through all the roller coasters here. I should have warned you. I thought you knew about it.
No, I didn't know about like any of this.
Man, I should have warned you that it is dark. Okay, my bad. My bad on that one. I failed on this one.
It's okay.
And then the other scene to that was like the feminist scene where they're able to look at their own vagina. And apparently Fannie Flagg was in that scene. Like the author made a cameo. And that's not her first time in a movie. So facts you should know. Facts you didn't know. There you go.
There you go.
But yeah, that infamous scene which they're talking about looking at their own vaginas. I remember that scene going like, what? Because like they all were removing their underwear. And I was like, oh, as a group. Okay. That's a thing. But the whole idea of like feminism coming up, and she didn't feel like she could fit in that either. So she didn't know where she fit in anymore. And then, but she's still visiting Nini throughout this time, and she's growing more confident, hearing these inspiring, brave stories about Iggy and Ruth, and she's really like, yeah, that's right. Even at one point, again, screaming Tawanda as she got back at a couple of rude girls who had stolen her parking spot, you know, because the girls are like, just face it, lady, you're younger and
faster,
prettier, or younger and faster. So that's how, because they had stolen her parking spot that she'd patiently waited for. And yeah, that causes road rage, people.
It does.
Just so you know. And so her response was Tawanda. She starts ramming it because the story is that Iggy would scream Tawanda as she did something brave. And I'm still trying to figure out where Tawanda came from. So if someone knows, because that's not Iggy's name, who the hell is Tawanda?
I the vibe I got was it was sort of like, because it was Frank, right? I asked her her name.
Yeah.
And she clearly could pick up on this guy is a douchebag and was like, it's Tawanda. And it was just sort of a, I'm not going to give you my name.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that's what it is. Because I was very confused.
I don't know. I mean, it could.
Still am.
It could be anything. But that was what I picked up. I was just like, she was just giving clearly a fake name and did not care.
Which is quoted in different movies. They'll scream Tawanda. I believe Tyler Perry parodied that scene as well, essentially.
Well, I had a thought about that within Spider-Verse, when Gwen panics, she gives the name Gwanda. So I don't know. I was just kind of like, oh, I wonder if that was a influence.
Maybe. It could have been. But yeah, so something like that. She runs into that car and then she leaves with a face of girls. I'm older and have better insurance or more insurance. And then she walks away. And I'm like, there you go. But yes, we see her confidence coming back or coming around. So we go back to Ruth and Iggy. Yes, and the return of bad husband Frank, who, of course, is in the KKK, you know, immediately. He comes back to pretty much find them. He tortures Big George. Later on, tries to kidnap the baby, but Jerk got smacked in the head and died and then served up as barbecue.
To the, like, guy trying to figure out who did it. Coolly and incessantly.
Right, yeah. So the GBA guy comes through to solve the murder, but enjoying that barbecue. Sure does like that barbecue. All the people did. And after several years, the car that Frank had driven, is discovered because there's too much rain and it flooded out. And then they officially arrest Iggy as well as Big George for the murder of Frank. And a trial occurs, but the Reverend, who she's been teasing the entire time, gets on the stand, lies about where she was and giving her an alibi and getting out of trouble. And she and George are cleared. Turns out he had used Moby Dick instead of the Bible to swear on, and that he had made a deal with Ruth that Iggy would come to church. So there's that. We discover later that it was actually Sipsy, played by Cicely Tyson, who had accidentally killed Ed, trying to defend everyone and get back the baby. And it was Iggy's idea to make him into barbecue, which everybody, again, barely loved, because everyone's like, that sure does smell good.
This really made me think about a lot of stuff, Samantha. I was like, how many revenge plots involve feeding the person to other people? But also, like, Big George seemed to know how to cook that.
He sure did. She was like, we need to boil the hog. Boil the hog.
Which I totally get, like, with Southern Gothic, like, don't ask too many questions. But, yeah, like,
don't ask.
But it was just
things
funny.
Happen. Happens and it gets handled, okay? Uh-huh. That's what happens. and in between all this, Evelyn continues to grow in her confidence, even stands up to Ed, her husband, who is, like, really condescending and you want to smack him. But kind of the 90s version of a husband, of the typical husband. So it wasn't too far off. I've seen this.
Nope.
And she's still visiting Nini, who tells her the rest of the story. Ruth and Iggy have been living a good life, but soon Ruth is diagnosed with cancer and she dies. Very tragic, of course.
Yep.
And I've seen people talk about how that's the saddest death scene.
Again, I was like, wait, what? I gotta go record something in a minute.
Sorry.
It's all right.
And that's kind of how the story ends. Apparently, like, the town essentially shut down. She said that they made the statement that, you know, they really felt that the Whistle Stop Cafe was the heart of the town. And when it shut down, the little area town shut down as well. And here we find that as Evelyn and Nanny come to the conclusion of the story, Nanny has left the nursing home after going through a lot of, like, did she die? Mm-hmm. I know everybody loses it for a minute. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't. She ends up leaving because the person she was with had passed away, so she didn't need to be there. She went to her home and found that her home was demolished because it had been condemned, but no one had told her, so she was waiting for it. But Evelyn goes and explains everything and then invites her to live with her and Ed. And we see the ending scene with Ruth's gravestone that has a jar of honey and a note from the bee charmer. Again, that inside joke. And then we see Nene and Evelyn look at each other like, oh, she's here? She's still alive? Blah, blah, blah. And then there's some insinuation that maybe Nene was Edgy. Again, we're going to come back to this because that's a hot topic debate. Ooh. And I have thoughts. So do okay. you. So yeah, that's the movie. I'm sorry that I didn't tell you that it was a tragicomedy.
That's okay. It was a fun ride. I was like, well, wait.
It's a good tragicomedy.
The train. We didn't even talk about this. But there's a scene where you think Ruth's son has died by train and he did lose an arm. But I'm sitting here like, this train's gotta go.
The train's got to be stopped, which it eventually does.
But it's implied that the train leaving was also part of why it closed.
Yes, which is actually something that really does happen. I know, like, when the train stops going through areas to bring supplies, or, like, it takes a lot of jobs away, it takes a lot of supplies away. It happened actually in my hometown. I don't know if I ever told you that. My grandfather had invested in an area and bought land and all these things in a lumber area because there was train tracks and there was supposed to be a train that went through, and then last minute it didn't, and so he lost that business, and everything failed because of that. But there's this train track that has never been used that goes through my hometown.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it was very sad at the end when Nini was, you know, sitting on our suitcase and staring at this thing, and this whole town is completely empty.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, it's true. That does happen. There are real towns you can visit like that are just completely abandoned, that were built around certain things that aren't there anymore, don't run anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there is a Whistletown Cafe in Kennesaw, Georgia, right across from one of the most racist places that you can go to, ran by a man who is a racist, and he proudly claims to be because he has all his Confederate flags with a no certain people who can enter his store.
Oh, God. On
a sign that says it. Yeah. If people know Kennesaw, they know what I'm talking about. He's been on the news many a times. But yeah. But that exists. I know in Macon, I think there's a Whistle Stop Cafe as well. Or Valdosta. It might be Valdosta because Valdosta is mentioned several times in the movie. And then the original Alabama place, I think, has a cafe like it that was based on. Mm-hmm. This cafe was based on. So there you go. If you want to risk going to the South like that. Go for it. I don't know anything about the businesses, so I can't say to that. But it's always a risk in my world. Yeah. The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
We're going to talk about the themes a little bit. The first theme is family, because we start out with Buddy and your chosen family. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about like friends and lovers, essentially. But yeah, we see how Iggy is connected to her family. Her mama, she doesn't get enough shout out. Iggy's mama really was there for her. And in the book, her mama and her family are very supportive of Iggy's lifestyle, which we're going to get into in a minute, which is unusual. And mm-hmm. a lot of people said that it's not believable, especially if from the location and timing of when the book was based on. But yeah, I felt like that was really sweet. The Buddy Jr., the connection between Iggy and Buddy Jr., who she raised after Ruth dies. You know, you can see that same connection that Ruth had with Iggy as she was growing up. That changed a little bit, though, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think it did.
And then that whole small town community feel that has each other's back. Obviously, the Reverend coming through, mm-hmm. saving them in the end. Even though no one knew the truth except Sipsy, Big George, we didn't really talk about Smokey, mm-hmm. who was the alcoholic who they took care of a lot. And he had a crush and was in love with Ruth, apparently. So was trying to defend. Well, he was a good guy anyway, but like mm-hmm. was defending her. Those four of them were the only ones who knew what happened. Mm-hmm. And they never even told Ruth, and everybody suspected that it was Iggy because mm-hmm. she has a temper.
And she had threatened to kill him.
Right.
In front rightly of people. So. Oh, yeah, rightly so. The framing was also interesting because the way, like, when you lay it out, okay, we know who did it. But and when you're watching it, you don't find that till the end. So you're kind right. of like, oh, who could it be? But yeah, there, I think there's a really sweet beat too between Buddy having all of these stories that he would tell. He would tell Ruth and he would tell Iggy, and then Iggy later telling those to Buddy Jr., and then that being Ruth's like last request is, please just tell me the story. I know it's a lie, but just tell me mm-hmm. the story.
Yeah.
So that was a really, I mean, painful, but like a good through line of, you know, his influences, his right. influence. And that's what it started with, was like, we can't tell her story without talking about how important he was right. to her.
And it's very Southern. This whole like Southern culture of passing down tall tales, mm-hmm. essentially. And that happens throughout. Well, being a good storyteller, that there's something to being a good storyteller in the South. I grew up with that, knowing that there are certain people you knew would entertain you with whatever story. I have so many family members who can do this, that they want you to repeat that story
right.
repeatedly throughout the years because it's so funny because mm-hmm. of the way you talk about it. And then Jessica Tandy's character, Nene, does that. So it's like a whole through line in general about the legacy of storytelling and like opening up people's eyes and like feeling involved and or changing moods or, you know, like really influencing individuals. So yeah, for sure, that's a huge part of that. And it is a huge part of like Southern culture, and I'm sure it's bigger than that when we look into it, because we know that's how legacies are taught. Mm-hmm. As Native, like indigenous people do this. The Native first people have done this in order to keep their traditions alive. So we know that's a thing for all specific cultures like that. But the way that this happened with the tall tales, we see that as well as an influence in this movie. And then, we'll come to the love friendship. Because again, like I said, I was like, So obviously we have to talk about Ruth and Iggy. Again, in the book, they are openly in a relationship, actually. They are out together. Everybody knew it. Again, in fact, Iggy is out as a lesbian since she was young. The family and community had supported her and was accepting of her, even to the point when Ruth came involved and they were, I guess, initially getting together. Her father, Iggy's father, was like, "Do you understand what is the responsibility of taking care of a child?" As if she was, and in the article I read, it said man to man talk, very sexist, but like trying to emphasize that her role, their relationship role of what she would be, the way she dresses in the movie was very indicative of her being more masculine than not. But in the book, it is outright said that she is a lesbian. Again, in the movie, they took that all out. Mm-hmm. And we don't see that. Because to the point that you don't even know if they're actually sharing houses and who's sharing houses with whom. Because at one point, I know, Iggy was living with Sipsy. So, and then they're talking about when Ruth got sick, she moved to a different house. I was like, so what house? Wait, what? Where'd she go? Where's she at? Mm-hmm. And then you also have Iggy having relationships with men, the implication that she was having relationships with men. And in the book, Iggy is having relationships with women. And I think the, not prostitute, but the woman in town. I don't know. The loose woman? I don't know.
Oh, no.
I don't know. This is what as I was reading the differences, what they said. Uh-huh. So but they said that she wasn't exactly a prostitute, though.
Mm-hmm.
But something to that implication.
I see. Okay.
I don't know. In the book. And those who read the book can probably clarify for us, because I have not read this book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think this is an interesting perspective, because I haven't read the book either, but I had never seen the movie. But we did, one of the reasons this came up was we did that episode on movies or entertainment that made you question, if you're queer. And at the top, we gave examples a lot of people listed, and one of them was Fried Green Tomatoes. And I read an essay about it. And when I was watching it, so I guess I was coming in prime thinking, they are. Because the essay was very much, it brought up the book, and it was very see, this is why, and all this. And so I was watching it you're giving me all the, it's kind of sad, but I was I don't even see this in modern movies. Look at how love they are.
Yeah. Yeah. They really played it up. The river scene as mm-hmm. well was one of, now I see it. When they're in the water together and they come out and they're underclothes and they're not naked. They're fully dressed. They're just wet. It's but the way they're so, they're there it is. The lingering look after she does the bee charming, the questions, the teasing that Iggy does with Ruth. It's But again, the movie makers and producers made it safe enough mm-hmm. that there was plausible deniability, which is sad, which is why I questioned the GLAAD award. I get it. The queer people would definitely love this movie, but I wish it had been one of those they were outright saying it. It is right now, I think, but back then it wasn't. They were hiding right it, and they still got a GLAAD award. I'm like, that hypocritical.
Yeah.
Not from GLAAD, but from the producers and the directors.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a having your cake and eating too type right of situation. And it's also sad given what we've talked about before, where it's unfortunate that we can't, there's a scene early on where I'm like, okay, Ruth is into Buddy.
Yeah.
But then she takes Iggy's hand and I'm like, okay.
Right.
But it should be, it's sad we don't get enough depictions of platonic friendships, relationships.
Right.
Of all types, that, it could have been, especially because they were trying to hide it, it could have been they were just good friends. And,
right,
that's fine. That's a great story. I'm all about female friendships.
Exactly.
But it's kind of sad because I was like, oh, no, I finally get to see this thing. But also, I'm just, It feels like erasing one thing for another thing. I don't know if I explained it well.
Right. There is this level, like, you want this to be a both of those things. Like, I grew up thinking it was about female friendship, really gathering for each other. Like, it, the song, Earl's Gotta Die.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is, I'm pretty sure it's based on, like, the Fried Green Tomatoes friendship. Mm-hmm. But it's a friendship. That's a friendship. Like, that mm-hmm. you would do whatever you have to for your friend. But, like, yeah, it's like, could we not have both where this is this? But... Because you do want that queer love story mm-hmm. that is so sweet and so endearing. But then you also want that friendship where you don't need that as well. And I know that's something that you deal with your sexuality in general, specifically, Annie, because, like, both of those things can exist mm-hmm. in that level. But I found it funny because I did think about the courtroom scene where she expresses. Because in my mind, I was like, why doesn't she just say he was abusive? But in that time frame, that wasn't seen as abusive.
Right.
It was just keeping your woman in line kind of conversation.
Right.
So, and she says, I love her. That was that moment of like, but then mm-hmm. she said, she's my best friend. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, wait, okay. So it was that back and forth, that tug right there too. They're like, they want to put that in just in case that people
right.
assume. And, but it can be both, right?
It can be.
But well, that's the play. That's the, again, that straddling the fence
right.
that they do.
I feel like there's a difference here between that of like, oh, I don't want to outright say it because I'll lose money as a studio, and it being, you know, we have histories of, like, you know, Boston marriages or ways women mm-hmm. would get married or live with each other because the time didn't allow it. But also, sometimes, a lot of times, I would hope the person you love is your best friend.
Right.
So it's complicated. Like, there's a lot to unpack with that.
Right. And again, this is 91. It was starting to become more open,
mm-hmm.
but still very fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So many things. Remember, 80s had a lot of scare with HIV, which is a lot of fear-mongering and a lot of going after the gay community. They purposely were demonizing gay communities with this. So it's this level of like, okay, I see what you're doing, but at the same time, why did you take the GLAAD award? Like... type of thing.
Right.
You know? Like, right. Okay. Because the book was explicit. So you altered
right.
it. If you altered it, you had a reason to.
Right.
But again, that's one of those things I go back and forth on. And I would not have been allowed to see that movie had they been a gay relationship. I will say that. And that's part of the reason,
yep,
I'm sure, why they did that.
Yep, it is. But it was funny to me watching it from my standpoint and being like, wow. They are
overtly. They love each other. Just kiss already.
Kinda. They have a whole scene where they're like throwing food at each other
fruit
and it's somehow erotic.
Those two scenes, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And the other friendship, because we can't go away from the fact that Nini and Evelyn, as mm-hmm. they grow in their friendship, is beautiful. Nini is teaching her so much. As she's talking about confidence, because yeah, I do say at one point, she's like, I think she might have killed her husband. I think she's reading
yes.
into the story a little too hard.
Yes.
Can someone check on her, please?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it was, I love the friendship. Jessica Tandy, she was already thought of for this movie. Like, she was already going to be cast. And apparently she loved this role and everything about it. Maybe the first time I'd seen her, Kathy Bates, was in Misery. So Misery was 1990, and then this was soon after. So this was Kathy Bates era.
Yeah.
Obviously, and I love to see it. But yeah, apparently 90 was her, was Misery, and she did phenomenal. So this is a complete flip for her, going from that to this, and
yeah.
her pulling both of this off is genius. I loved it. I love Kathy Bates.
Yeah. She did fantastic. I love the... it felt like a very feminist awakening for her, where
yes.
she's hearing these stories and she's like questioning, why can't I even look at my own vagina? Why am I going to these like marriage classes when he could give like two shits about it? Like
right.
my husband, and having all these questions and hearing these stories from Nini and getting inspired and kind of recognizing her own anger and what she wants. And I feel like there's a pretty powerful metaphor of, there's one part where she, Kathy Bates' character, Evelyn, tears down a wall doesn't ask her husband, just tears it down. It's like, I want this light. I want this. I want this. And then she decides, no, I want Nini to come back in. And she rebuilds it. So it feels like she's tearing something down. And she's becoming more confident and more aware of what she wants. And I also love her husband, Ed, is like doing the frantic, oh God, she might leave, have some flowers.
Right. This is what I do. I'm so sorry. I didn't notice.
Right. Which I find fascinating. I think that's an interesting part of how marriage in this patriarchal system can control women is this idea like, oh, he'll leave me. Mm-hmm. But then she's like, maybe I'll leave you. And he's suddenly panicking because she does do all this stuff for him. She like hooks him the food. She gets him the beer. She doesn't bother him. She lets him, I won't say lets him, but he talks down to her and she doesn't say anything about it.
Right.
So it was kind of funny and kind of frustrating. And I was still sort of hoping that they break up at the end. But like that.
Yeah, you just wanted to be the two of them, Nini and Evelyn chilling in the house. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the way to go. But you know what? As you talk about that, there is like feminism is definitely in this movie because we see the growth of Ruth as well. The subservient, quiet woman who doesn't want to, you know, who comes in to try to tame Iggy, but the opposite ends up happening essentially. And Iggy kind of brings out her other side, you know, for her birthday, they took her to the bad spot. I don't know what else to call it because it's not a bar. It's just a get together place where she plays poker for the first time. She drinks for the first time. She gets into the water and they have that moment, you know, and Ruth saying this is the best birthday I've ever had and like growing into it and then like finding her footing and then being able to leave her very abusive husband and being able to stand up against him and being able to do her own business, you know, running her own business and doing well with her friend and not needing a man necessarily to take care and raise this child. Like all of these things is like this growth for both of them, Ruth and Evelyn, in parallel stories and then becoming women in their own right and doing what the hell they want.
Yeah. And it was interesting too, the because unfortunately, you still don't see that many roles for older women. So it was interesting to hear like Evelyn and Nini talk together and then sort of see this, like especially when Evelyn like rams her car into this other car six times and have that conversation about age or like these younger women who are, you know, maybe, quote, don't get it. It was just, I don't know that I've seen too much of that, of the like learning from the older generation and maybe those two women who got their car wrecked. In a couple of years, they'll be like, wait, they'll meet their own.
Also, they'll never try to steal someone's spot again.
No, I don't think they
will. You got the wrong one. Ruh-roh.
I also love that Evelyn's last name is Couch. Yeah, and she's like always getting sat on because she keeps having these confrontations where she's like, why are you being so mean to me? I don't understand why you're doing this.
Right.
And that was it.
That's it. And then she just runs away. Uh-huh. Not this time. Not to Wanda.
No.
Not to Wanda. That's going to bother me. The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers,
Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
So another theme on this is, of course, racism. As with most movies of that time, and even recently, though they do try to make a correct spin of addressing issues like racism and the disparities, they still get stuck with the stereotypical narratives in portraying the issues. Here's a good quote from Ranker.com. "One pronounced shortcoming of Fried Green Tomatoes is how it portrays the lives of the African-Americans in Whistle Stop. The movie doesn't hold back in displaying Jim Crow era discrimination, as well as the subservient roles African Americans were forced to accept. It does a better job than other films at the time of showcasing how systemic intolerance destroys communities and ruins lives. The movie, however, makes the mistake of presenting characters like Big George and Sipsy, played by Stan Shaw and Cicely Tyson, as stereotyped hired help with endless dedication to their employers. These characters lack depth or personal agency. While they are welcomed with open arms in Iggy and Ruth's chosen family, their stories only matter in relation to the white people around them." And again, this is that white savior thing that we see constantly. I know I want to say The Help. I've never seen that, but that is the large criticism. It's like, why do you have to center black people's trauma around a white person saving them, essentially? And don't get me wrong, again, as this quote says about the fact that they did a good job, they don't hold back in displaying the Jim Crow era discrimination and the roles that they have to accept during that time, especially in the South at that point in time, and like the influx of KKK members and the violence that was happening against the black community at the point, and honestly still, but they're still like, as the portrayal, they really do lean hard in to be like, oh, but you know, these white people will save them because they're protecting them, and that's why they're okay. And also, they're mild and cold. I will say, like, the Sipsy character, there's two big stereotypes in there. The Big George, the name Big George in itself is like an indication, and Sipsy's character is an indication of like, yeah, this is almost like Gone with the Wind level of portrayal, but okay, of the black community. But like Sipsy says at one point, she's like, I'm not your mama. Don't come in here like that. Like, she does like stand firm in making sure she separates herself from them, like the white people she works with or works for at that point in time. And of course, she handles her own because she's the one that took out Frank. But still, her narrative is so quiet, you know, like it's still just very quiet. And she just meekly walks away. And maybe that's, again, purposeful. And also, yeah, it's Cicely Tyson. There's so much more she could do with that character. Like, she's a phenomenal actor, and it felt like a throwaway, even though maybe that's the way the production was. I don't know, but like, how dare you not use Cicely Tyson more, because she is phenomenal. What is wrong with you?
Yeah. I mean, once again, I did not know this was going to happen to me this morning when I was watching this. I was like, oh my God. What? I think it's interesting that, because this really started a whole conversation in my head about, we've struggled with this too. You know, when you portray something of the time, how to do that carefully, delicately, accurately, properly. And I do think a lot of that has to do with who's writing it, who's in it, who's centered in it. Because it's something we can't and shouldn't ignore, but it also isn't something that should be romanticized by white people. So I think that's important in this whole conversation. And it felt clumsy. Like, I feel like a lot of things they did do better than a lot of stuff I've seen, right, even recent stuff. But it still, right, felt kind of clumsy. And I'm going to assume that's because of who was involved.
The main people that I see credited are not Black, are part of the Black community. So I would say, you know, I don't know who they talked to. Maybe they did. I think when it comes to like those specific characters, you have that, you've seen Big George and even that name like throughout the years, and you know exactly what kind of character you're getting into and what they've become. Most of the caricature of Black men in those times, and they do it purposefully, of that gentle giant, doesn't talk a lot. And so there's a lot of implications to that, as well as the Sipsy character of being that, you know, the motherly nanny-ish type, but, you know what we're talking about in that level, in taking care of or being the one that has to give the tough love to the white character because she's too spoiled. But again, this like level of like, this is where the stereotypes of when we see of Black women and Black men kind of come from, in that level of like, you're trying to target people and minimize who they are as people, and taking away the depth of the story that is there. Once again, we don't even know anything about where did Big George come from. We just know that he and Iggy are close, but why? Who is he? What? And then who is Sipsy a part of this as well? Like, what? So it's just kind of all those things that they purposely did these things to make them a side character, not even of human almost, just further the plot. And that is, again, really problematic. And even though, again, this movie does better job than some, especially during that time, it still is like, oh.
Yeah.
And then at any point, I'm going to say this, if you're using derogatory terms and scenes of like a KKK scene with the Black community at that time, and you don't have Black people present to like monitor as well as dictate what's happening, I don't think it should happen. Maybe that's too harsh of a, I don't know. I just don't think it should happen. Like, that seems, it feels real bad.
Yeah. And it also like made me, because this was a long time ago, but occasionally I would get complaints before you, Samantha, I would get complaints like you about trigger warnings. And I went into this movie not knowing any of this was going to happen. And I was quite shocked at the language that was used. And I was just like, yeah, that should be a warning. That there should be at the front, like, hey. And I was like, I guess movies really don't do well at doing that, or a lot of other stuff. But like, I rented it digitally and I got no warning. So I was just, but it is, it's true. Like, I think that that should be something that only people from the Black community, yeah, they should be there. They should make sure like, okay, this is being handled correctly. But also there should be just a warning at the front. Like, hey,
yeah,
it's gonna be in there.
I mean, there needs to be a revamping, because of course we can't ignore that history. That's too mm-hmm. ignorant, and we don't want to downplay that. Mm-hmm. But again, this is that level of like, okay, let's have a conversation about who should be able to dictate what's being said or done here, and why it's important. And if you don't have Black people on that set as part of that voice behind the scenes, then you should not have permission to use it. Like, that's,
yeah,
end of story.
And it sucks, because that's like such a traumatizing thing. That's one of like the
yeah.
most
yeah
frustrating...
you don't want to work that in, but
right, but it,
you don't want them to do that labor. But at the same time, there's so much to this. It's like, okay, how do we go about this? Because yeah, we already know what happens when white people take a hold of it, or non-Black people.
Right, we've had that conversation before about the pain of doing, of being a historian or a researcher, when that's your expertise or that's what you're doing. And so it is really painful. So I think that should also be recognized too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's so much to this that's like, oh. Mm-hmm. By the way, I was wrong. What was PG-13? because that had started at 1984. That was later. That was in the 90s.
It was after Poltergeist. Yep.
Oh, that's right. We had that conversation. So it was PG-13 at the very least, but still, like, some of those things are like, whoop.
Yeah. I'm only laughing as a kid. I did not know what's going to happen to me this morning.
That's what this one's on. I guess we're even. This one's on me. I'm sorry.
Nah, it was all right. It wasn't as traumatic as my mistake, so it's okay.
No, I mean, it was I just wasn't still.
Yeah.
In my head, I know you hadn't seen it, but I assumed you knew of it, like of the things.
I thought it was older women living in a house together eating fried green tomatoes. and that two of them were in love. That's what I thought it was.
Welp, you know, and then the final, I guess the final theme is death and endings, because we do talk about that throughout when things change and what happens and what that looks like and dealing with that. Because, yes, we have a lot of death throughout this movie. At the very least, at least Nene's still alive. And even though we're talking about themes, there's been a debate. And most of the things that I've seen online assume that the movie, Nene, who was played by Jessica Tandy, is actually Iggy. So in the Wikipedia page, they have Jessica Tandy playing Nene / Iggy Threadgood. In the IMDb, it does not credit her such. So I don't think so. People talk about whether or not she was Iggy in the end, telling the story as a third person and then being Nene. But in the book, she's actually not Iggy. She is Iggy's sister-in-law because she married Iggy's brother that we met. So this is how she knows the story. So, but there's a whole debate about it, and people are like, "No, she's Iggy." They changed it in the movie. And I was like, I don't think so.
I told you I thought that was going to be the conclusion. I don't think so either. And I started to rewatch it because, as you know, once I rent something, I watch it like a million times. And I feel like the scene in the beginning where, I mean, you probably know better than me, but where Iggy's coming down the stairs and in her dress and gets in a fight, wasn't that Nene who's like, she's going to ruin my wedding?
No. So Nene is the sister-in-law to Iggy, the boy that's teasing her, the brother that's teasing her. She marries him.
I guess I have no idea who is getting married.
That's the oldest sister that we never hear about again. That never comes into play
again.
Well,
and I can't help you at all, but I thought it was going that way for a minute. I thought it was going to be one of Ruth or Iggy.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. That's so my professional
you and I
opinion.
both though, but like all of the things that I've read, they go back because like I just read through it. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because at the ending, I was like, that's not Iggy. Because like the look between Evelyn and Nene when they discover that there's a jar of honey, knowing, and that's the end. And then almost like when Evelyn goes, like, maybe we'll run into her before we leave. I think everybody insinuated that was an insinuation that she was running into her right then or trying to play coy. But I was like, don't think so.
Yeah. And it also kind of felt like, for me, that it was more of a, she is a free and wild spirit, I guess. Like,
right.
She's almost a force instead of a person. Like, not that she isn't, but almost like it's that taste of feminism you get through her. And
right.
So it's like something that will live forever. I don't know. Like, I kind of got the vibe. It was more like, oh, she's around, which she is,
legendary.
I believe.
Yeah.
But also on top of that, like the look would be more, you know, and she's living within us, like, and is still going. And
oh, you got real deep on that one.
I get real deep.
You sure did. That's not where I went, but okay. Yeah, nice. I liked it.
Oh, good. I love this. I do this all the time. My friends will be like, I'm pretty sure it's just... All right.
You're not wrong. She's become mythical at this point, but okay.
Yeah.
Inside of, find the Iggy in you. Ooh.
Yes. Yes. That we need that on a pillow or
her
something.
Her name is too close to Iggy, so...
Yeah. It's, you know, the itch of feminism.
Oh, there you go. Again, slipping it out. Sure. Yeah. Feminism? I don't like that. Let's not do that.
Okay. We'll workshop it.
Okay.
Yes. Honestly, like, there's so many things we could talk about. I love that they included Mary Kay. That really made me laugh.
Yes.
That made me have some
during
thoughts.
Those times. Yes.
Yes. Oh. Yes.
That's too rich for my blood, my parents' blood.
Oh, yeah.
We were Avon people.
But also just a lot of, like, yeah, 90s thoughts around women and,
yeah, dieting culture. I left out the dieting culture, the whole level for sure.
Yeah. And I love her friend who I never learned her name, but I love her friend who's like, I'll just whisper something in her ear and I'll be like, divorce. So it was fun. I mean, I didn't know what I was getting into, but I did enjoy it. But yes, this several listeners have recommended this one. So thank you. We do take your recommendations into account. So if you have any ideas for the next movie, some of you have already sent them. We have a list. I promise we are collating them. But if you have any ideas, you can send them to us at StephanieMomStuff@iHeartMedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at StuffMomNeverToldYou. We have a Tee Public store and we have a book you can pre-order at StuffYouShouldReadBooks.com. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Steph on Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.